Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Ascension Secrets of Saint Germain show. And I'm glad you all enjoyed Ron. Ron and I have become good friends, actually. When I was in Europe, he did some of my shows, and he lives here in Mount Shasta, and we've become friends. He's a great guy, and we were just over at Lake Siskiyou the other day, he and his partner, Angelique. Anyway, I'm back from Europe, and I'm going to tell you about some of the adventures and some of the things that happened and some of the insights and all. And I have to admit that, well, you know, I'm very honest. I'm not politically correct either, and I just kind of say what I feel and all that. And so I hope I'm not going to step on too many toes. But, you know, if I do, I'm sorry. I've been trying since I came back on the 15th to figure out what happened over there. I've asked Saint Germain several times, and he's given me some perspectives on it and all, but there were different things that happened. There was the third-dimensional aspect of the trip, and then there was the higher-dimensional aspects. The third-dimensional aspect, actually, was very disappointing to me. It was physically rough and hard and strenuous and bad weather and mixed in with a little good weather, but really horrible weather in some places. And just not what I expected. And so that's hard to talk about. So I'm going to try not to talk about it. But I just want people to know that, you know, sometimes the reality, fantasy far exceeds the reality. This was a trip that I had been wanting to take for close to 30 years. And it was a lot. It was a big effort to do so. It was a lot of time, and it was a lot of money. And on a third-dimensional level, I was very disappointed. On a fourth-dimensional or fifth-dimensional level, some really incredible things happened, and those are what I'm going to talk about. So, I spent 12 days in England. That was the beginning part of my trip. And outside of being in the train station where they filmed the Harry Potter movie and wanting to find the place to run into the post and go to Hogsworth, which I didn't find, that was about all I saw of London, was that really neat train station. And Paddington Station, and then I went over to Taunton, where they pronounce it, which is in Somerset, and stayed with a friend for a while. And then the real spiritual part started when we went to Cornwall. And I went to Tintagel, the castle, the remnants of the castle where King Arthur was born, and his half-sister Morgana, and Merlin's cave is there. And it's a place I've seen in my mind's eye many, many times, and it was, so I knew what to expect on a physically on a third-dimensional level. What I didn't know was going to happen was a very dramatic storm that even the locals, the Cornwall people, were amazed at how ferocious and how really strong the storm was. It was raining very hard and very cold, and the wind, you literally felt like you were going to be blown off the face of the earth. And it was such a bad storm that they closed the exhibit, or the whole facility of being able to go to the castle, after I was already there. And those of us that were already there, they let us be. And it was lots and lots of steps, and you're out in the open, and the steps are really tall, and I'm really short, and there were times when I had to pull myself up on the railing in order to get high enough for the steps, and I kept saying, they must have been giants back then. And then later on, I did find out that King Arthur was estimated to be over 7 feet tall. So I was right. They were giants. And so, I, you know, if I'm going through this hardship of this horrible storm, it occurred to me that it was like an initiation. Because the very next day, the sun came out, and it was beautiful and gorgeous, as it was the day before. The storm was only when I was doing Tintagel. What my expectations were was to have some sort of past life experience, or see the castle rebuild itself for, you know, in front of my eyes, because that's happened to me when I was in Egypt. The ruins did rebuild themselves in front of my eyes. And so I thought, well, gee, that'll happen there. But no, it didn't. It was just a real struggle. And the place that I liked the best was Merlin's Cave. It was, and I gathered a few rocks from there, and it was very magical and very mystical, and I really felt more energy there than anywhere else in the castle. And so it was... it was not what I expected, but I survived, and I feel like it was a badge of merit to actually have survived the castle. And the next day was a beautiful, gorgeous day, and I went down to Mount St. Michael, which is the beginning of the Michael Ley Line. And during the course of the 12 days that I was in England, I traversed almost the entire Michael Ley Line, most of it physically walking on it, and... so that was really beautiful and a great experience. And let's see, from there, the next day was St. Nectan's Glen, which is a magical, beautiful fairyland and beautiful waterfalls, but the creek and the ferns and the vegetation was just ripe with, you could just feel the elementals and the fairies, and they were just all dancing and just having such a wonderful time, and I had a wonderful time there too. And then the next night, or that night, I joined up with another group of people, and we went to Stonehenge, and we had a private time there. There were 27 of us, and we had the place to ourselves. And right at sunset, it was very magical. You could see the sun go down right by the stones, and you know, positioning yourself certain ways, you could see the sun peeking out from the stones. And it was beautiful. It was really a nice experience to be standing where so much history had taken place and still to this day holds so much fascination and mystery to the world. And let's see, the next day was Glastonbury. Yay! And Glastonbury, there is a ley line that runs from Glastonbury to Mount Shasta. And I can definitely say that Glastonbury is the Eastern version, the European version of Mount Shasta. The stores and the energy and the New Age, you know, mysticism mixed in with the Old Age paganism and brightly colored costumes and crystals everywhere and great restaurants and a higher consciousness. And it was just really fun. It was kind of like English Disneyland for me. And from on that day, we saw the Chalice Well, where the Michael and Mary ley lines cross. And that was a very peaceful, serene... I'm trying to think of a word. I mean, it was peaceful and serene, but surrealistic at the same time. It... definitely was a portal and a place of great faith and of great spirit. and a place where one could definitely tap into the energies and the spirit of Blessed Mother Mary and Archangel Michael. And we had a and the gardens are beautiful. And there's a tree there that's over 1,000 years old. And I found on the ground. I didn't touch the tree. I didn't hurt. Oh, I hugged the tree and kissed it. But I didn't take anything off of the living part of the tree. But on the ground, there were little twigs and things that the tree had shed naturally. And so I took some of those, and I'm going to try and root it and grow a copy of it on my property here in Mount Shasta. I don't know if it'll work, but I'm going to try. And it was very beyond grounding. just holding that tree and touching the tree and being in its energy was again a very profound experience and full of adjectives that I have not thunk of yet. I don't think they really exist. And then we went and climbed the Tor, which is a really, really, really tall hill, and very steep. And when I did stand on the Tor or on that hill, and you have a 360-degree view of everything, I did have a sort of a second sight experience with that. Supposedly, Glastonbury is actually was the Isle of Avalon, and was surrounded by water. And this actually is proven historically that at one time it was an island. And I could see it. It was a bright sunny day, blue skies, bright sun. But when I was there, through my third dimensional eyes, that were probably not totally third dimensional at the moment, but I wasn't meditating or having my eyes closed, I'm just looking, everything kind of started to mist over, and the water filled in around, and it looked as it did, in the 500 and 600 AD, the time of King Arthur. And that was neat. And so I really felt confirmation that, yes, that was Avalon. And still carries that energy. And I could see where Camelot, where King Arthur's castle was, to the south. Well, it was a 360-degree view. From the place I was standing, it was southeast, but from another place, it would have been, a different direction. And it just all fit. Let's see, what did we do after that? We went to Avebury, which is more standing stones, and to some wells. There was lots of holy wells in England, and I experienced about 4 or 5 of them. And then it was off to join my friends, Kevin and Christine, in Yorkshire for an Angelic Reiki update. And Christine was my guest 2 weeks ago. So if you listen to that show, you know all about that. It was just really fun to be with them, and the energy was really incredible and all. And you can listen to the archive show about Christine, or go to her website, the AngelicReikiMagic.com website, find out more about Angelic Reiki. It's also on my website, too, at AscensionSaintGermain.com. If you go under Sessions Offered, I have a big write-up about Angelic Reiki. And then, this is some of the part that was difficult about my trip. I was planning it from America on the Internet, never having been there before. So I do take responsibility for some of the problems, but difficulties and cumbersomeness of the trip. I needed to be from Yorkshire, I needed to get to an airport called Luton, which is one of the minor airports. It's like a B airport, so that I could fly to Romania the next morning. Well, you know, when you're looking at a map, it's hard to really tell just how far things are and how to connect from one place to another. And I figured, oh, it's a major airport. You know, it's a B airport. It shouldn't be too terribly hard. And it's just 20 miles north of Heathrow and all. Well, it took 3 days to figure out how to get me from Yorkshire to Luton, because even though the British pride themselves on their railways, from my point of view, they're not organized very well. You pretty much have to go all the way down to Heathrow from wherever you are to get to any place else, including just slightly to the left of where you want to go. So it took a partial drive, an airplane ride from a really tiny airport called Leeds to Heathrow, and then from Heathrow to another bus, and then from the bus took me to near the Luton airport, where I had to spend the night and then get a cab to take me there and then fly out. And it was exhausting, you know. And anyway, so off I go to Romania. And I was really excited about going to Romania. And I loved Romania. It was a very special place. And I had my friend Eric Berglin, who lives here in Mount Shasta, and is a world-renowned angelic harpist and healer and all-around great guy. He had been to, I found out at the WESAC festival when I ran into him, that he had been to Romania. And I said, "You're kidding, I'm going to Romania. And where'd you go and what did you do? And I don't know anybody there and I don't know where to go, or, you know, I'm just going totally on jumping off the abyss type of thing." And so he gave me the email address of two ladies that had helped him and had helped coordinate a workshop for him and things like that. Well, one of them was gone on a vacation in Thailand during the time that I was there. But the other one, Manuela, was very sweet, and she said, "Oh, I'll meet you at the airport. We'll take you wherever you want to go. We'll take you to Transylvania. I was with Eric, you know, and know the places that he went. We'll take you to those places and all of that stuff." So I get to Bucharest, the airport, and the luggage didn't come. And finally, about an hour later, I mean, this poor sweet woman is standing outside in the hot sun. It was very hot over there, for over an hour waiting for me to come out of the airport. And because of security, naturally, nobody can come in and all that. So finally, we got together, and they drove me all around Bucharest, all around the city, which Bucharest is called Little Paris because the architecture is so similar. And it's a beautiful city. The buildings are, I love old ancient architecture, and I love the Byzantine style and Rococo and all of those, the Belle Arts and all these different old periods. And the buildings were just magnificent. I mean, we don't have anything like that in America. And so it was beautiful to see all these buildings, and they have big parks everywhere, and it was quite nice. And the next morning, we were off to Transylvania. Now, I have wanted to go to Transylvania since I was a little girl, because when I was about 7 or 8 years old, I saw a Dracula movie, and I fell in love with Dracula. I thought he was a very romantic figure, you know. The part that he drank blood and killed people didn't seem to faze me at that age. But, you know, I liked the idea that you never grew old and that you got to stay up all night and sleep all day. You know, to me at that time, it sounded like a great lifestyle. And so I've always been fascinated with Transylvania. thinking that it was because of the Dracula stuff. Of course, then when I found out more about Saint Germain and found out that he was the Prince of Transylvania, I thought, oh, that's why I really like Transylvania. So for one reason or another, I've wanted to go there my entire life. And not too many people go there, although they do have a tourist thing, but it's, you know, how many people do you know that have ever been to Transylvania? Probably not too many. So I didn't really know much about it. I'd read a little bit about it on the internet. But I had sort of vague memories from times past, from other lifetimes, about Transylvania, or at least what I thought were memories from other lifetimes. And it turned out that Transylvania was exactly like I thought it would be, which kind of surprised me on one hand, but really didn't surprise me on the other hand. And it's, you know, it's got mountains, and it has valleys, and it's very rural and very, very old-fashioned, very, very much like it was many, many years ago. You would not call it a high-tech area, although they do have computers and they do have the internet and they do have cars, but they also have horse-drawn carts that go side by side with the cars. There's the only place in any of my travels, any of my international travels, where I did not find a McDonald's, so that's a great plus right there. And what I was, the part that did kind of surprise me, and I, you know, that I didn't expect, was that the energy of Transylvania is so much like Mount Shasta. I was really astounded by that. And there were certain places that I was taken, different hilltops that we climbed and different valleys and waterfalls and all, where I felt exactly like I was in Mount Shasta. So that if I could correlate it to certain places on the mountain. And it was like, gosh, it's like the same place. So I could see very easily why Saint Germain, who had so much of his lifetime spent in and around and through and caring for Transylvania, why, and has a etheric retreat there, why he chose Mount Shasta for his American retreat, his interdimensional etheric retreat. And the Carpathian Mountains are very dramatic looking, as they're like solid granite going straight up and very jagged jagged points and very severe looking. And when I looked at them, I went, oh my gosh, they look just like the Castle Crags. We have this anomaly of geography here very close to Mount Shasta, about 19 miles down the road, that are called Castle Crags. And they look just like the Carpathian Mountains. They don't fit in with the rest of the geography around here. And the Carpathians are much bigger, and there's more of them. But the similarity was just something that could not be missed by me, having experienced both of them. And that was a surprise to me. So while I was in Transylvania, and I was in Transylvania for a very short time, I was in England 12 days, and I was in Romania only 4 days, only two of which were in Transylvania. Spent two nights there. And, no, one night. Yeah, spent two days and one night in Transylvania. And I really wish that I had more time there, because there's really a lot of places to explore. But I found this church that still to this day, you know, a month later, is very prominent and very, very close to me in the whole experience. And it wasn't a place that I knew existed beforehand, and it was nothing that was planned on the trip. My friends had taken me to this monastery where this one particular monk, and the church is very, very old, and it's a church that when Saint Germain was the Prince of Transylvania, he used to go there and pray. And so, you know, that's why they wanted to take me there, because, you know, there's an imprint of his energy there. And as we were going there, we passed this church, and one of the ladies said to me, "Oh, you know, that's a church devoted to Mary." And I went, "Oh, you know, I'd like to see that." And we whisked off and went to the monastery, and we were at the monastery longer than we expected. So the second place we were going to go to after that then became impossible time-wise because we spent too much time at the monastery. So on the way back, I said, "I want to go to that church. I want to go to that Mary church." And they took me there, and when we got there, there had been an evening mass, and it had just let out. So we walked in as all these other people were walking out. And I was really blown away by this church. I have seen physical apparitions of Mother Mary. And the first one that I saw was December 9th, 1990. And it was at a little church in Colfax, California. And she had been now appearing at your local church, the Blessed Mother Mary. She had been appearing every single day from Thanksgiving. And she started appearing at 10 o'clock in the morning when they were doing the rosary. And by the time they were finished saying the rosary, she was in full manifestation. And this went on for a while. And I heard about it and drove, you know, to the church to see her. And it was a mind-altering experience. And her energy was just so amazing that it changed my attitude about her. I must admit and confess that I used to think Mary was kind of, you know, just this nice little lady and, you know, the mother of Jesus and no big deal and all of that. But when I encountered her energy, I changed my mind. I was like, wow, this is the powerful feminine. This is what the divine feminine is all about. And I became very respectful and very very devoted to Mary in a non-Catholic way. And so, you know, I'm saying this to tell you that I've experienced, you know, this very strong energy of Mary. When I walked into that church, her energy was so overwhelming there. Oh, and as I'm talking about this, I'm now getting goosebumps up and down my body. That it made the experience in Colfax pale dramatically in comparison. I did not expect that, you know, to just be so overwhelmed and so enveloped in a very, very strong, dramatic dose of her energy. And I immediately just, you know, burst into tears because it was just so profound and so beautiful. And then I looked at the church, and I had never seen a church like that before. I'm kind of a church fanatic. Not that I go to be religious, but I love going to old churches, especially one, and actually religious buildings of all denominations. You know, I go to, when I was in Egypt, I wanted to go to the Citadel, which is the sort of like the Islamic version of the Vatican. And, you know, I like seeing and feeling the prayers and the devotion of people. I can tap into that energy and really feel it, and I love it. And I love seeing the beauty and the devotion that people give to God, you know, when they create churches and all. I'm always very touched by that. So I've seen a lot of churches, and I had never, ever in my life before seen a church like this, because it was a Catholic church. I grew up Catholic, so I know the pattern of how Catholic churches are built. And no matter, there's a lot of churches, especially in Los Angeles, you know, that are named after Mary, or, you know, the Church of the Blessed Virgin, or, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But when you walk into the church, at the center where the priests are and the whole center stage thing, it's always the crucifix and Jesus. And Mary is the statue that's off to the side. Usually Mary on one side and sometimes Joseph on the other, or Mary and Archangel Michael, or Mary and Teresa, you know, whatever. But Jesus and the crucifix is always front and center. Not in this church. It was Mary. It was a huge, big, golden statue of Mary that was just incredible. And then the church itself was very different in the flavor and the decor and the architecture of a Catholic church. It was all marble, but very pale pastel marbles. It was white marble, pale pink, and pale green. And then lots and lots of gold, lots of gold leaf and 24 karat gold. And it was overwhelmingly beautiful and gorgeous. And the edges had rounded edges and domes. And, you know, it had that feminine, rounded architecture instead of the straight angles, you know, like most of them are. And that was one of the highlights of my trip. And if I ever pull together a sacred site group and stuff, we are definitely going to that church. It was just really fabulous. So I did not find St. Germain's Castle, which was one of my purposes and goals of going to Transylvania. But, you know, it's okay. I have to go back anyway, so I'll find it. But I did find some other real treasures besides the Mary Church, some very special places that his energy was definitely imprinted on. And the Carpathians. There, you have to take this tram, it's a tram, a cable tram, and you take it up to the top of the Carpathians, and because you can't walk there, and up at the top there's various rock formations that the locals swear were not carved by mankind, but were carved by the elements. I don't know if I believe them or not on that, because one of them is an exact replica of the Sphinx in Egypt. And that's a pretty good wind carving. But there it is, the Sphinx on top of the Carpathians in Transylvania. And then there's another one that has to have been carved by humans of the Taj Mahal. Very interesting place, Transylvania. So I reluctantly had to leave Transylvania because it was time to go to for Psy. A place that is well, well steeped in Saint Germain and much history and much beauty, and a place that I've seen in the inner realms many times, because there is a mock-up of Versailles in the higher realms as well, and very similar to the third dimensional one, and I've been there often, but not to the third dimensional one before. I've never been to Europe before in my life. The only foreign countries I've been to are Egypt and Japan and Bermuda. The Bermuda Triangle, that was a trip, literally. It's a very powerful vortex. But anyway, so I get to Egypt. I'll be going to Egypt in April, if anyone wants to come along. Kevin's putting on a big WESAC event at the Luxor Temple, which is where the Ascension Flame is anchored. Oh, and that's another thing I did. At every place I went, at all the power places in England and all the historical sites, I anchored in the Violet Flame. It's a huge skyscraper-sized Violet Flame. Told it to stay there forever and to transmute all negativity and all karma from the past, from those places, and also to raise the vibration and frequency and touch the lives of all the people that would go there, because those places attract thousands and thousands of people every year. Well, tens of thousands. And I got to pull my dogs in. Come on, Jolie, come on. And so where was I? Oh, so here I go to Versailles, and I had a really interesting day going there, because two people from out of nowhere literally popped up and helped me get to Versailles. And it was, I flew into this small airport that's about 50 miles outside of France. Because it's very difficult to get from Romania to France. There's very few flights. And the one that would take me to De Gaulle only went on 2 days a week, and they didn't correspond with the days I needed to go. So I had to go to this tiny little airport. And I get my luggage, and I walk out. I mean, this airport is literally a porta building, like you rent for, like a big glorified tent that you rent for weddings and bar mitzvahs, you know. And that's the airport, is this tent. So I get my luggage, and I walk into the main part of it, and I'm just kind of looking around as to how do I get to Paris from here. I knew there was a shuttle or a bus or something, and so I'm looking for it. And Paris was the only place that I didn't have people accompanying me, locals that showed me around. So I was completely on my own figuring out how to get from point A to point B when I was there. So I'm standing there just with my head just kind of turning around, you know, getting a scope of where I am, and boom, right in front of me, didn't see her walk towards me, just boom, she's like pops in right in front of me, is this sweet little old lady. And like I said, I'm 5'1". I towered over this woman. She must have been 4'5" or 4'6" at that much. And she appeared to be, I don't know, in her 70s maybe. Little cute little gray-haired lady. And she just starts rattling off to me in French. And you know, she had no suitcase. She didn't even have a purse. And she's rattling off to me with this big smile on her face. And I speak a little bit of French, but not as much as was required to her. The only thing I kept hearing is she kept saying Versailles. Blah, 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 Versailles. Blah, 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 Versailles. Well, I thought she was asking me for directions, because that was one thing that happened on this trip, is no matter what country I was in, people thought I lived and belonged in that country, which was pretty strange, but they did, and would come up and speak the native language and ask me, you know, how to get to this place or that place. So that's what I thought she was doing. And I said to her in French that I only spoke English, and then I said, do you need to go to Versailles? You know, and I was trying to help her get to Versailles. And so I showed her where I pointed where the shuttle was and all of that. And then I turned to start to walk to the shuttle, and I turned to look back to see if she was coming with me, and she was gone. And I could see the whole building from my standpoint, and there was no way she could have walked out of the thing in the short amount of time. So she was just gone. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. So I get on the bus, on the shuttle, and I go into Paris. It takes about an hour and a half. And then you have to take your luggage and walk forever and go over to the metro to take another metro to get to another metro and get off that one and change trains to go to Versailles. It was like an all-day thing. And so I do the first metro, and when I get to the station that I have to change at, there she is again. She just popped, again, same thing. She just popped up right in front of me, and she starts, blah, 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 Versailles, blah, 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 Versailles, and stuff. And I'm, again, trying to point out to her what to do and where to go. And then all of a sudden it dawned on me, wait a minute, how did she get here? You know, she didn't come on the bus with me. And she wasn't on the first metro, and again, no luggage, no purse, nothing. And so then she just turns to this young man who just kind of appeared out of nowhere, and she calls him over and she tells him in French, you know, about taking me to Versailles. And he's, oh, okay, and this and that. And he was from Algeria, but had had lived in France since he was 3 years old, and he, you know, so he spoke primarily French, but he had a little bit of English, and he kept saying to me, oh, and this, he looked just like this lifelong friend of mine, and I kept saying to myself, my God, he looks just like Seyon, he looks just like Seyon, and that made me feel very, very comfortable, you know, in an instant connection with this guy. And he kept saying to me in French over and over again, je suis Versailles, which means I am Versailles. And that didn't dawn on me till afterwards, you know, why would he say I am Versailles? So he took me on the train and struggled with my luggage and all of that, and got me to Versailles and got me a taxi to, you know, to take me to my hotel and all of that. And I just knew that he was an instrument, whether he really was a third dimensional person or not. I knew that it was a touch of Saint Germain getting me safely to Versailles, which I really didn't know how to get there, didn't have a clue really how to get there. I was starting to get really weary because I'd had 3 hours of sleep the night before. And but the woman, I knew right away, you know, I knew that she just was not what you would call third dimensional. And then Saint Germain, I asked him, you know, who was that woman? I mean, what is she and stuff? And he told me that she was, he said the easiest classification is that she would be classified as an angel or a guardian, and that she's one of the beings that has the ability to pop in and out of form. And and he said, you were correct when you said she just popped in front of me. He goes, that's what she did. She just popped in front of me. And, you know, and that he had set her to help me get to Versailles, and to make sure that I was, you know, safe and knew where I was going. And I asked him about the Algerian guy. His name was Abdul, and I thought, oh, this is just this is too classic, you know. And he said that that he's an adept who, you know, is a high, not an ascended master. He's still in human form, but he's a high initiate, and that he and this angelic being work together a lot, and that he didn't pop in like she did. He lives in form, but he was summoned by her and all of that to take me and all. So that was a very, very mystical, neat experience. And let me see how much more time I have. I think I've blabbed on for almost my whole hour here. I'm walking around. I don't know what my timer is. Oh, there it is. Oh, my gosh. I have 8 minutes left. Versailles was overwhelming. It's mind-blowing how big it is and how ornate and how luxurious and incredible. And I have to change phones because this one's battery is beeping at me. But it's just awe-inspiring. And going through the different buildings and the different rooms and stuff, and knowing that, I mean, there were certain rooms that I knew for sure by the nature of the room, like the music room and the grand hall and the hall of mirrors and you know, certain places that Saint Germain was there, and he was there often, and it was, I can't say I didn't have any out-of-body experiences or any bizarre, you know, phenomenon-type things happening, which I was really hoping for. But I didn't have any of those, but just the knowledge and the realization that I was standing where he had stood so much just a few hundred years earlier was very, again, there's no adjective. It was a profound experience, and Versailles was really beautiful, and I know that I did not live during that time, but yet I know that time period well, kind of from watching it from the other realm. And to physically be there was a profound experience for me. And I know that it altered me. I don't know how yet. I'm still kind of in the experience and still integrating and all, but I had the knowledge, the knowingness that as I was standing there, that somehow I was being altered, that I was being changed spiritually or in some capacity that I'm not certain of yet. And that in itself was a unique thing. I mean, there's always events in our lives and things that we do and choices that we make that change us and help us to grow and help alter the course of who we are, or put the dot on the I of our destiny or our path. But usually, at least in my case, I haven't always been aware of it at the time it was happening. It would be an event or a place that after it was over and after the transformation or the
the gain or the growth spiritually had happened, I could turn and look back and say, ah, it was there, or oh, that was a crossroads, and my life changed from that point on. But it was always in retrospect. This was one of the few occasions where I could feel it happening as it was happening. And that was unique. So I spent 2 days, I spent 3 days in Versailles, but the first day I was so exhausted, I slept from 4 o'clock in the afternoon until 10 o'clock the next morning, so which I really needed. And so I really spent 2 days, 2 waking days in Versailles, and I spent both days at the castle and on the grounds. There's so much to see. I mean, I still really didn't see everything, or I didn't see everything in great detail. Some of it you just kind of rush through so you can say, okay, I've been here now, I got to get to the next building, and it's kind of this marathon of going through. But I definitely want to go back to Versailles. And so then I went to Paris. Now, Versailles technically is Paris, but they're about 20 to 30 minutes apart from each other. But I wanted to spend the night, and I wanted to sleep in Versailles, and then I wanted to move to Paris rather than keep taking metros back and forth. So my hotel I picked purposely because it's right on the corner of the Boulevard of Saint-Germain, Saint-Germain, and Saint-Michel, Archangel Michael. So I was on the corner of my two favorite energies, Archangel Michael and Saint-Germain. And it was just really, it was just magical. I mean, gosh, I love Paris. Even though I didn't get to see very much of it, I was just there 3 days. And it was sort of like a comedy of errors. I would buy a ticket to go on the double-decker bus. And by the time I got to the double-decker bus, because I had to walk several blocks to catch it, I had somehow lost my ticket and couldn't get on the bus. And then the same thing happened. I bought a ticket for this dinner, a dinner cruise on the Seine, where you get in this big huge boat and it goes up and down the Seine at night and you get to see all the lights of Paris and stuff. And I thought, oh, I really want to do that. That would really be, you know, kind of a fun thing. It's something that an alone tourist can do. And I paid a small fortune for this ticket. I had to take the metro over to the Eiffel Tower, and then from the Eiffel Tower walk down to the Seine and find the boat. Sounds simple. An hour and a half I walked back and forth, back and forth, back and forth down there. Could not find the boat until I finally saw it leaving the dock. So that was kind of disappointing. But not really sure why that happened. Maybe it was Mercury in retrograde. Who knows? But One thing I did go to the Louvre, and when I had an amazing experience in Notre Dame. Again, churches. what happened in Notre Dame, besides me having Holy Communion, just kind of, you know, off the fly, I figured, oh well, I'll just confession. I'll just do confession for myself, and the opportunity was there, and I thought, I'm doing it. And it was very neat. It was a very neat experience, and I just really concentrated on the meaning of it, of accepting, you know, the body of Christ into your life. And so I really felt that. And then after Mass, I started walking around looking at the building like the rest of the tourists were doing, and I came across this statue of Joan of Arc. Huge, huge statue, and I was just overcome with emotion seeing Joan of Arc. And there's a plaque there, and it said her name, you know, Saint Joan d'Arc, born Laurel Valley, burnt at the stake. I mean, burnt alive, and in Rouen. That was shocking to see that in print. And then right underneath it, it said, it was in this cathedral that, oh, I'm going to cry here. It was in this cathedral that her reputation was restored. And I was just very much overcome with emotion to know that I was standing where she had received her reputation back and became a saint because of that. Well, my time is over, unfortunately, and so hopefully you found this interesting. it was a fascinating trip, and you know, in time to come, maybe more stories will come out. But in the meantime, have a fabulous 4th of July and what's left of it. And I will talk to you next week. And in the meantime, violet blessings to one and all. Bye-bye.